The Talk of the Northwest, The Greg Hughes Show on Highland Radio.
Hello, good morning. 5 minutes past nine, Tuesday the 10th of March, 26. How are you all keeping? Hope you had a great weekend, because I didn't come to work yesterday. Donna Marie sat in for me and did a great job too. Thank you to Donna Marie. And we've lots coming up in this couple of hours for you. Community to Garda information coming up after 10 o'clock. That and so much more besides. The lines are open for you to get involved in the conversation. Start your own topic. Pass on your news. Maybe it's good news. We like all types of stuff here on the show. Anyway, 086 60 25000. That is the WhatsApp or the text number. 086 60 25000. Give us a call on 07491 25000 or email comments at highlandradio.com. If you're listening to the podcast or indeed the overnight replay, feel free to get involved in the conversation. We can pick up your comments and carry them through to the next live show. And just a reminder, the podcast available on our website for you every morning at 11:30. We turn it around pretty quickly for you and then is on Spotify and iTunes very quickly thereafter. So if you want to subscribe, please, it's great if you can, or maybe even leave a nice comment if you do listen on Spotify or iTunes. It all helps with the algorithms. We'd really appreciate that. And also what you get thrown into that feed is our Friday podcast. Our last Friday's podcast has been really, really popular, not surprisingly, because the day after tomorrow, Mr. Michael Sugrue, ends his tenure at Letterkenny University Hospital after 18 years in situ there. He did 20 years in Australia too, originally from Galway. Very interesting story. It's not too late for you to listen to that. And this show and the weekly podcast, all there for you, either on the website or on Spotify or on iTunes. So it's great if you can have a listen. Maybe give it a like or leave a comment. As I say, it all helps, or a review for that matter. Let's look at the newspapers, and we want to read this one just in case it might relate to you. I've often said on this program, I find electricity bills overly complicated, and I find it then hard to determine what's the charge, what's usage, what period, blah, 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 blah. That might just be me. Maybe for you guys, it's as simple as anything. But anyway, maybe it's not, but we do have to scrutinise our bills. A massive malfunction on electricity smart meters over the weekend meant some householders were told they had consumed thousands of euro of energy. Hundreds of thousands of people are understood to have been impacted by the blunder. One download from a smart meter told a household they had consumed close to 9,000 euro worth of electricity in the first week of March. Data from the meter claimed the home's electricity consumption was 19,000% higher than similar homes. The homeowner was shocked after downloading their consumption data to be told that they now owed thousands of euro. Customers of Electric Ireland, Bord Gáis Energy and Energia reported sky-high meter readings. One householder posted an online discussion platform Reddit about the malfunction meter, writing, "It says that I've used 17,000 kilowatt hours on Saturday, which is over 5,000 euro. There must be a glitch or something." Now, as I say, we will spot these errors, you would hope, and maybe it'll be rectified before people get their bills. But maybe you are one of those that witnessed a massive spike in your electricity over the weekend. I can't imagine you'll be left on the hook for it, but we shall see. On to the Irish Times. Trump suggests war in Iran may end very soon. But to what end? What has been achieved? Why? How will it end? What is a success? What is a failure? What is a running out of time and energy? I don't know. It's hard to figure out exactly why Trump went in there in the first place, and it's hard to figure out how he'll frame his departure. He had to say something because the price of oil has, or did for a time, go over the $100 mark. I think it went over to $109 per barrel. He made this comment and it dropped back to 92. But, you know, world travel, the cost of fuel around the world, inflation in countries is all being affected by this action. He says it'll end soon, but what does an end look like? How will he frame it as a victory? What will he say he's been... Well, I imagine what he'll say is Iran's capability to attack its neighbours or to attack Israel or to attack anyone has been diminished. He will say they have no ability now to create nuclear weapons, that their navy has been impacted, their missile sites have been impacted. That's fine. The Iranians will just send 20,000 euro drones all over the place if they so wish. You know, so what exactly does the win look like? And I'm asking you, I'm not making a statement. US President, though, reading on, US President Donald Trump suggested the war in Iran could be close to ending yesterday, as he described the conflict as just an excursion into something that had to be done, and said, "We are getting very close to finishing it." During a press conference in Florida, Trump said Iran had lost two levels of its leadership and the conflict would be over very soon. In a separate interview with CBS News, he said, "I think the war is very complete, pretty much. They have no navy, no communications. They've got no air force." Speaking to a meeting of congressional Republicans, meanwhile, he said the war could be described as a short-term excursion. Trump said US forces had already won the war in many ways, but we haven't won enough. So he'd already claimed that he had successfully wiped out Iran's ability to create nuclear weapons. That was the last time he and Israel went in. Now it's about their army. I mean, was there a threat that Iran was going to use their battleships and their air force to, and what have you, to attack another country? Or was this just... And now I'm not being in any way defensive of Iran. We're all impacted by this in terms of, you know, the cost of our fuel, as I say, you know, international travel. So I'm questioning not whether or not Iran deserved it or not. I'm questioning, you know, what has been achieved. You know, what will be the victory here, because he's moved from nuclear weapons now, which he said he'd already successfully done, he's moved from nuclear weapons now to their air force, their communications and their ships. But I never heard any talk of a threat of Iran attacking someone else in that way previously. But anyway, 0860 25,000. You heard it in the news here. Mary Lou McDonald has urged Justice Minister Jim O'Callaghan to meet the families of those who died and were injured in the Chrysler explosion, saying refusing to do so has caused huge hurt. The Sinn Féin leader has also called on the minister to hold a public inquiry into the explosion, which left 10 people dead in the village of Chrysler in October of 2022. Yesterday, Ms. McDonald and local TD Pierce Doherty and Padraig McLaughlin met the families to discuss the campaign for a public probe. Speaking after the meeting, Ms. McDonald said the refusal of the minister to meet with the families has caused huge hurt. It's important they are heard, and it's possible to do this without compromising the criminal investigation. Of course he can meet them if he so wished, but when asked was it insensitive for him not to, he says it's not his business to be sensitive or not. It's his business to find the truth. So he could have met them. Whether or not a public inquiry was to follow immediately remains to be seen. Right, now, former Sinn Féin leader Gerry Adams was yesterday accused of being directly responsible for the IRA bombings in mainland Britain. He was secretly an instrumental force in the IRA and built a two-strand attack, Armalite and the ballot box, it was alleged at London's High Court. Adams, 77, is being sued by three men injured in bombings in 1973 and 1996. So there'll be, because of the nature of that trial, there's going to be a great deal of accusation coming from it, no doubt. Did you see the big kerfuffle relating to Dublin Zoo? They had put out a promotional piece for Mother's Day, and they used a really high-profile Irish comic who dressed up in drag. I think you would call it drag. I hope I'm not offending anyone in calling it that. But it caused quite a furore. Dublin Zoo says it has been disappointed by online backlash to a Mother's Day promotional campaign which saw it use a drag artist to advertise a special offer. Last week, the zoo launched its Mums Go Free offer to help families celebrate mothers around the country. The deal was for a complimentary adult ticket when a full-paying adult or child ticket was purchased online for Sunday. The zoo used Instagram personality James Patrice, is that his name? I believe it is, who dressed up like his Malahide Mammy character to promote the event. This sparked an outcry from many on social media who queried why the zoo could not find a woman to front the campaign. I wonder, is that a bit of a storm in a teacup or a double D cup, looking at his outfit here? Or really, when you're doing a promotional like that around about International Women's Day, around Mother's Day, should you get a woman to do it? And the people I saw quite angry about it are those mostly sort of invested in the gender wars, if I could put it like that, it says. But anyway, there you go. And finally, Fuel prices are not going to come down anytime soon, it would seem, because the government doesn't appear any more likely to introduce energy supports despite oil prices rising by 25% since the war in Iran began. Oil has hit $100 a barrel for the first time since July 2022, with the G7 saying it was taking all necessary measures to support energy supplies. But we're not going to be getting any respite on that soon. And I'll run through you, in fact, if you're interested, very clearly a little later on in the programme, precisely what is the breakdown of it. We talk an awful lot about the tax and the raw costs and this, that and then, right? But what I'll do is I'll give you the exact figures as to what money goes where and how much of the increases, the new increases the government's taking, etc. That's all coming up and more after these.
The Greg Hughes Show on Highland Radio.
And we say good morning to Mr. Eric Roberts. Hi, Eric.
I'm currently on the way out to rehearsals here, Greg. Sorry, must be reception issues. I'm not hearing you too well. But we're prepping all week.
Are you getting a sense of how excited everyone is at home, Eric? How much support you have? I know you're based in Dublin. I know you're very closely connected to home, but are you getting a sense of the buzz that's around the place?
It's funny, my words become very small. I go to rehearsals and I go home, and I'm not seeing a lot of outside noise at the moment. So I'm very, very excited to come home, see family and friends, and I suppose get an idea of the support that is there. I do have a good idea because I'm seeing everyone being so supportive online, and obviously we're getting incredible votes in every week, so I've made it this far. But it's going to be really special coming home and being able to see it face-to-face, I suppose.
It must be, I'm sure it's always been very real, Eric, but it must be getting very real now. The fact that you've made the final, the fact that you're, you know, performing so well according to the judges and getting that public vote as well, it must be pinch yourself stuff.
I mean, I honestly didn't think I'd make it this far. The standard's been incredible throughout the whole competition, and it's just been such a long journey. It's been since the end of November. So for it to all come to fruition now this weekend, it's going to be very, very special. I'd say an emotional one as well. It's been my whole life for so long. So I'm so proud of myself to have made it this far. Hopefully we can go the whole way.
And another part of that emotional journey is going to be the homecoming on Wednesday. You're going to have the team with you, I presume, for footage for Sunday. That's on Wednesday. You're coming into Downing's, the GEA club there at 4 p.m. And I'm sure there's going to be a huge crowd, Eric.
Hopefully, I'm my sister and her husband Paddy and my family have all been canvassing like it's a political campaign for the last couple of months. Posters and billboards on roundabouts. So I'm so thankful for the hard work that they've done up there and behind the scenes. And hopefully, yeah, we get a big crowd. I mean, I suppose it's good for the wee village. It's great for Downing's and the support's amazing. And I'm so grateful to have it. Do you know what I mean? And it's going to be so special to go out. I have a new niece that I haven't met yet, and I'm going to meet for the first time tomorrow. So I'm going to rehearsals now for the day, and then I'm going to hopefully drive up a little bit later on tonight so I can sort of relax tomorrow. But the VT team are all going to be there. We're going to have radio there. I think Ireland AM are coming up. So, yeah, it should be a very special day.
Happy days. And what do you know, or what can you tell us about Sunday and your prep for that, Eric?
So we were rehearsing yesterday, and we're going to have two dances. I'm actually driving now to meet the judges to find out what my second dance is going to be. So there's a show dance, and then there's a judge's choice where they'll pick their favourite routine from the course of the competition. So I'm on my way to find out what that's going to be. Then it would be a long week of rehearsing and practicing, and hopefully we can put on two great dances.
I think it's been very clear that A, you're very popular with the public, but the public vote has been very critical in how this final has been put together. So if people want you to win, you know, the judges' scores are important as well, but I think it's important people get their phones out, Eric, because there are other contestants obviously have massive support because they're able to sort of bridge that point gap at times.
Absolutely. The votes are actually more important than ever coming into this weekend because it's only the votes. Judges' scores are actually irrelevant. It's totally down to the public Wow. now in the finals, so the votes matter now more than ever. So again, any support is greatly appreciated. I mean, I'm going to put on as best a show as I can, and hopefully it's enough to impress the public. But the support back home and around the country has been amazing this far, so I'm hoping we can continue that coming into the weekend.
All right, and the first big date, though, is Wednesday. This is not just for the people of Downing's, Carrigart and that area. You know, anyone can come along and get to Downing's football pitch at around about 4 p.m. We'll get there a little bit earlier, and they might even get on the telly as well. Sure, why, they can support you and might make the might make the cut as well.
100%, yeah. There's a great chance you could be shown now on Sunday, but bring your grannies and granddads and uncles and aunties and get the kids down. And I know some people were making banners and posters, so I mean, I'm so excited to get down and see everyone there. But please do come from far and wide. It'll be amazing to get a great crowd down there and just show how supportive Donegal is, what a great county we are.
Excellent. And that also feeds into the general public psyche as well, so it's important on many levels. All right, Eric, I won't delay you any further. I know you're flat out this week. It'll be nice for you to get home for a day or two as you build up for the big final on Sunday. But, you know, you're doing everyone up here proud, and people are really, really invested, as you well know, in your success now at this stage. So all you have to do now is go on and win the blooming thing.
Fingers crossed. Thank you very much, Greg.
Look after yourself. Bye-bye. So if you want to show your support for Eric, you can get along to Downing's on Wednesday afternoon at 4 p.m. And, you know, the cameras are going to be there. You might get on the telly. Who's to say? Right, OK. Mary McFeely is a lactation consultant for Donegal and joins me in studio now. How are you getting on?
Hi, how are you doing, Greg?
It's good to see you. Now, I heard about this and interested in teasing out the significance of it. And it's a new dedicated infant feeding room. It's officially opened at St. Connell's Hospital campus in Letterkenny. So why is something like this required? I know it seems like an obvious question, but just to bring everybody up to
pace. This is a big deal because the HSE breastfeeding policy came out in 2021 and it's now 2026, and we finally have a dedicated infant feeding space for mothers and babies in St. Connell. So, yeah, it's a big deal and it's a long time happening. Hurdles to be jumped over to achieve this, but
talk to me about that, about the hurdles because it doesn't seem like it should be complicated.
Absolutely, you know, and there should be designated spaces provided for mothers, but the driving force, I suppose, behind this, I have to mention there's Siobhan Patton, Manager of Health and Wellbeing, and Brona Furby, Manager in Estates. So they're both mothers and both breastfed and can see the importance that this is needed. But I mean, the hurdles would be funding and finding a space and getting a space built. You know, it's an old building. There was literally no space available in St. Connell. So it's really, really great that this space was highlighted, and the girls worked on achieving the space and getting funding for it. So it's a bigger deal than you'd imagine.
Yes, and when we talk about the benefits of breastfeeding and the supports that are there, it would have seemed like a bit of an ironic gap then that couldn't be facilitated.
Exactly,
and I'm
right.
Sure some of you guys were going, we need to practice what we preach here.
Exactly. And I do a breastfeeding support group, a couple around the county, but there's one in Letterkenny. And at the moment, some of the mothers attending are returning to work soon. And it's a huge anxiety for them because extended breastfeeding is becoming more popular. So those mothers who are breastfeeding, they don't want to give up at 6 months or a year. They'll keep breastfeeding, but they also want to go back to work. So it's really important that it's facilitated for them, that this anxiety is big for them. So at least if they know, well, they go back to work, particularly within the HSE, a designated space will be there so they can express.
So how does that work effectively? So who do you envisage using it, and how would that work in terms of going back to work? Because are there childcare facilities there for
so
I'm just curious as to how that,
if a mother is returning back to work and their children generally would attend a creche or a childminder, but the mother's at work and she's breastfeeding, so she would need then to support her supply by being allowed to express milk during her working day.
Understood.
But the room in St. Connell's is called an infant feeding room. There is a lovely breastfeeding chair, there is a changing unit, but it's for all mothers and babies, so it's for all infant feeders. So if a mother is in the campus attending an appointment, we would hope that she would be able to use the room to either breast or bottle feed her baby and to change
and
her
maintain
baby.
Routine.
That's exactly it. Yeah,
well,
to be supported.
Rather
to do
go,
that.
Well, where do I go? I can't go here because I can't do that.
Yeah, and it's funny, at the day of the launch, we had one of my colleagues there, Teresa Daly, who's also a huge advocate for breastfeeding. She was describing to me when she was breastfeeding in a public space, and she was asked to move, not asked not to breastfeed, but she was asked to move to a different area. And the area that they were moving her to was a screened off area beside the toilet.
That's so why really, was that local?
It's actually, I don't know if it was
right,
local
okay,
or not.
No,
and it's
still... That's really strange in 2026.
Exactly. So we have to change. We have to change societal ideas.
And maybe our idea of what we think of boobs for as well, too. I don't mean that crude, and I'm sure she's been discreet, but for crying out loud.
Yeah. No, I totally agree. You know. So we have to change, and society now has to embrace all our breastfeeders. And then hopefully that will increase the amount of mums that breastfeed, because they know they'll be supported wherever they go.
But you and
go.
The team are making inroads. We've been laggards for quite some time, haven't we, in the Northwest here?
Absolutely.
And
yeah,
Ireland
we have.
As a whole, but the Northwest as a region of Ireland. But we have to sort of recognise too that things are improving.
Things are improving, and things like this, it's just, you know, for institutions as big as the HSE to invest in breastfeeding mothers returning to work and invest in breastfeeding supports, which is why I have my post, because I'm a public health nurse lactation consultant employed by the HSE, which is a huge move.
It was
so
massive.
That there's free access to lactation support, and it's for everybody. So that's a huge thing as well.
I used the word boob earlier on, right, the breast, and someone wrote a letter of complaint to the use of the word in the context of breastfeeding, and I was like, right, okay, anyway, but that's fine. So whilst we're here, it's not just ladies who've had their babies or what have you. Your supports can start early in terms of planning and stuff, right? So if people are going, well, my mum didn't breastfeed and my aunts live in County Galway, so, you know, and I'm not saying everyone needs female support, right?
Yeah.
I'm just trying to create a scenario. So, you know, at what stage can a woman sort of reach out and go, right, I'm thinking of going down this route to see if it can work for me?
Yeah, and that's exactly, and that's the time to say, not really sure if I'll do it, I'm not really sure how to go about it. So, there's education, there's antenatal classes. I do a breastfeeding preparation class. The antenatal clinic in Letterkenny, the midwives will signpost mums to supports. But I'm actually doing a class on Thursday evening, and one of the mums that was signed up can't come now for some reason. So I suggested to her to come to the breastfeeding support group in the pastoral centre on Fridays while she's pregnant, because she can chat then to breastfeeding mums and ask, well, how do they go about it? What does she need to know? And what's the most important thing to know? So to speak to breastfeeders when you're pregnant, that's a really good idea.
I know for some people it can be a very simple process and for others complex, but why would you, if you have the opportunity, leave yourself in a situation after going through childbirth to face with something that feels like the unknown?
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean? You wouldn't just buy yourself a car and get into it and have you never driven and wonder what's that gear stick for? And you know what I mean? And as I say, I'm not trying to make out that it's complicated and complex, but in that moment...
And
the pressure, you can feel like, you know, I'm being told that if I don't do this, it's not best for the baby, but I'm a loving mum and I want
that's
to do
exact,
it.
And that's all correct, you know, and it is the best thing to do, but it's a learned skill, like anything. But my colleague, Kate Finnemore, in the hospital, is a lactation consultant, and she's there to support mothers. And there is education for the midwives. So hopefully everybody that's in a position to help mothers has the knowledge to help them as well.
Mm.
And there's some great public health nurses in Letterkenny that are really interested in helping mums breastfeed. And they are. It's the support. Yeah, exactly. And to seek support.
Greg, as a new mother of a premature baby, I'd like to know why at St. Connell's campus was chosen as the place to have the breastfeeding room. I've had several appointments with my baby since January this year, but yet none of these appointments have been at in St. Connell's.
Yeah.
Right? Which I People want the results in the right place.
There's no designated breastfeeding room in the hospital. So it's not like St. Connell's was chosen. St. Connell's campus went ahead and organised and got funding and managed.
So that wasn't seen as the solution to the problem.
No, but there is a room needed in the hospital. Okay. So that lady's quite right. And it's been looked at for a long time. And there's been a few, again, hurdles. So it is being looked at and it's going to be considered.
And this isn't Mary's comments, but I do know in terms of what might seem like a very simple thing, there's quite a number of processes and levels of approval before it can actually be done on a HSC site, right? So it's not like, oh, well, there's a room, pull the chairs out. And it should be perhaps, but it's not.
Yeah.
And that's why the achievement at St. Collins is such a victory, right? Not a victory like it was a war, but because these things are not easy to get over the line.
Yeah, so we are looking at one in the hospital just to reassure.
So your point is a valid one, and just to be clear, according to Mary and her team, that's not seen as a solution to the issues that are at LUH. And that's going to be the next big one.
I hope so. Mm. Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Right, so who can avail, Mary, or how do you go about it? I want anyone who can have access to it and for you to let them know how.
Yeah, so it's the infant feeding room in St. Connell's, and it's beside the main reception at the entrance to the dental clinic. So it's at entrance two. And there is a really helpful lady in the reception in St. Connell's. She is Catherine Farmer. So Catherine will signpost mums to this room, and she's going to kind of monitor and make sure that it's well maintained and when we have cleaning arrangements and everything. Up to now, mums have been going to Catherine and asking, where is the space to feed? And she's been trying to accommodate mothers in all these nooks and crannies, and it's not ideal. It was terrible. Yeah. So it's great now. It's beside the reception area. Right. So, you know, anybody who comes in, for most appointments, will pass this room. So it's for all mothers with babies, and there's a changing facility in there as well for mothers.
Lovely stuff. Thanks so very much.
Anything we've missed or
you need to add whilst we have you here? No,
I think that's everything. Thank you.
Lovely stuff.
Yeah,
and just if anyone wants to find out about any of the supports that are available, where's the best port of call?
So, it's all on the HSE website.
It's
all there.
All the numbers are there. All right, Mary McFeely, lactation consultant for Donegal. Thank you so very much. Let me see. Did I read this breastfeeding comment? No, I did not. Great news to hear this on the show today. I had my baby at the RSV clinic in St. Connell's before Christmas. I was honestly shocked to see there were no baby changing facilities there. So this is really welcome news. The support for breastfeeding mothers is fantastic as well. I'm nearly a year into feeding my second baby now, and that's entirely thanks to the encouragement and help from the breastfeeding team. Brilliant to see investment going into this. We had a conversation with Lee just before nine about the use of face cloth. Greg, we use face cloths all the time. Just one use and then wash, not unhygienic. How often do you dry your face on the same towel? My son's in his mid-20s and always uses face cloths. Face always feels fresh and clean after. I've used those wee sponges. Do you know those little circular sponges? I'm not sure they're designed for me, but anyway, I find them useful. But how you must be washing face cloths just flat out. You use the face cloth once and then rewash it? I don't know. I don't use them, so I can't be accused of being unhygienic. Councillor Jack Murray is with me now. Jack, Grania Avalia, very important site in Donegal. But again, unfortunately, it's being used and abused, it would seem. What's the latest concern that we have?
Yeah, it's an absolutely disgraceful situation. Greene Avalia, as we know, is a beloved site of massive historical importance in the nation and County Donegal, the Northwest. As a whole, it's hugely important to tourism, over 100,000 visitors a year. But the day before yesterday, somebody or a couple of people took it upon themselves to take scramblers inside the fort and have torn up the grass by skidding around. Now, look, you can't overstate the significance of greening. That structure should not be jeopardised in any way, shape or form. So, I was speaking to the Gardaí. They have an open case on this. They are investigating it. And look, I'd be asking, there's a lot of houses up near Greenan. They might have seen motorbikes or scramblers going past 2 days ago. So if anybody has any information at all, I would ask them to come forward and contact Gardaí.
Yeah, and I would be astonished if social footage hasn't been uploaded to social media. So often we see that. In terms, what needs to be done here? Obviously, desist, right? It's crazy to be at it. Is we've been talking about access, and is this part of? Is this a bit of a problem with that? Then, so is there anything needs to be looked at there? We don't want to restrict access, but we don't want people going up there in motorised vehicles either.
Yeah, well, firstly, I'd ask people to have a bit of cop on. They're obviously going up there. They know how scenic the site is. They know how beloved it is to the people. So I'd ask that they respect that. But for years now, I've been on your show many, many times asking for the OPW to employ staff at Creedon of Valle for two reasons. One, to provide tourism information, historical information to visitors who mightn't know much about the site, but also we would then have a watching eye. You'd have somebody there full-time monitoring the site, protecting the site and preventing things like this happen. So this again compounds that call, and I would again ask the OPW for this site that has over 100,000 visitors a year, please employ a tour guide, a full-time member of staff at that site.
Yeah, and just to recap, what do we know about what happened and when it happened then? I know you talked that maybe there are witnesses, people with information, but what do we know, what happened and when?
Well, the day before yesterday, scrambler motorbikes, I'm not sure the number of them, but they got up into the site and were, was definitely the term, skidding round and have torn up. If anybody knows Greenan, it's a grassy area in the Ringford itself. That's completely destroyed at this moment in time. So, look, you would have to get a scrambler up there, you would have to drive past a dozen or two houses at least. So people might have seen them. They're obviously noisy vehicles. People might have heard them. So if we know what time they were, we know what maybe make they were, what the people were wearing that were on them, I'd ask them to come forward to the Gardaí, because the Gardaí are taking this very, very seriously. And they have an open case and they will be investigated. And I think those responsible will be brought to task at some point.
Yeah, and they need to understand that that is a crime. It's a criminal offence. Okay. Right, Jack, thanks very much indeed for that. That's Councillor Jack Murray. And for those of you watching, we've been looking at an image there, which I'm sure will be searched. I'm sure it will be shared on our social media. The war in the Middle East. Caller says nothing has been achieved. This is him trying to pull the US out after realising he's fumbled the bag, and the Gulf Straits threatening to stop paying him, or the Gulf States. Whether Israel lets him pull out is another question. Because this isn't Venezuela. Iran's going to keep hitting Gulf States and Israel with drones after this, regardless of if Trump pulls out or not. But the point is, he pulls out. That doesn't fix... I mean, I don't want to dehumanise the situation, but we still have to deal with the consequences of it, you know, i.e. The price of fuel, etc. Hi, Greg. Just to let you and your listeners know that the biggest oil producer is the USA. This is ironic. Well, they're somewhat protected by it, aren't they? Reece smart me to blunder. It's all well and good saying that this was an error. What if it was 40 or 50 euro? Would people have realised it or just put it down to higher electricity prices? That talks to the issue I have with how things are... broken down in that bill. Sorry, I just wanted to run through you. I'm going to use a litre of diesel, by the way. You probably know this, but just to make sure everyone's on the same page, what the breakdown of a litre of diesel is. So we are going for 2 euro a litre. That's the basis that I'm using here. So the fuel base cost. So this is the actual cost of the oil refining and the garage's small margin. So everything to do with making the litre of fuel and the 6-odd cent a garage gets, it costs 77 pence per litre. That's at 2.05, by the way. 70 cents per litre. And that includes the profit, in inverted commas, for your garage. Excise duty is 43 cent, which is huge. VAT is 37 cent. So the excise duty, by the way, is a sin tax on mineral oils. It's fixed, so it doesn't change with prices going up and down. VAT, this is the one that can go up and down. It's 37 cent. Tax on the final sale price, and as I say, that goes up as well. So that means the state gets more money, the more expensive something is. The carbon tax is there. That's 19 cent. The Better Energy Levy, that funds energy efficient initiatives, that's 2 cent a litre. The NORA levy, which is paid to the National Oil Reserve Agency for emergency stocks, that's 2 cent. And that leaves the total pump price there at €2. So 77 cent is the actual cost of the oil, the refining of that oil, and the garage's small margin. So the tax bill, €1.23, or 61.5%. So when the price goes up, the only thing that goes up from the state's perspective, when the price goes up, the only thing that goes up is the VAT take. So if you take, for an example, a price, a diesel at the pump, 170, let's use that as an example, and it jumps to 205, that's an increase of 35 cent. The government gets an extra 6.5 cent per litre. Okay, everything else is sort of fixed. So there you go. And don't forget, too, there's another increase in carbon tax scheduled for May 1st, and that will add another 2 cent to the price of a litre, regardless of global oil trends. So I just wanted to give you a run through of precisely where your money goes on a €2 litre of diesel, €1.23 to the state, 77 cent, the cost of the oil, the cost of refining that to make it run your diesel car, and the garage's small margin. Because there's a lot of talk about it, and I just wanted to make sure we're all on the same page. Fergal McAloon is singer with the Whistling Donkeys, and he joins us now. Good morning, Fergal. How are you getting on?
I'm doing the best, Greg. How's things?
I'm doing good, and it's good to have you with us. What a sickener, though, because, you know, you're going fantastic, growing, going great guns, much of that within your control, but a bit of an experience in America where it was completely out of your control. What happened?
That's it. It was a bit of, put a bit of a dampener on the weekend. Now, we were in Chicago and we had our gig done. We had a great weekend. We had packed up the car and we were heading to the airport, but we had dinner booked on the way. So we stopped off at a pizzeria. The lads wanted to try some Chicago pizza, and we parked the car in a multi-story car park just literally next door. We went in and had our food, and when we come back, we just noticed the glass lying around the side of the car, and some of the stuff had been stolen from the car, you know.
Yeah, what stuff, though? Because a lot of good, high-quality stuff was in there.
There was a lot of... We got away... Well, in some ways, we were lucky. There was none of the instruments. They didn't seem to realise the value of the instruments, so they didn't touch the instruments. They took a fair bit of cash, and they took... Tomas's suitcase, which had his passport in, was the biggest issue. And then Oscar, the drummer, he's a videographer here at home. That's what he works at. And they stole his bag, all his video equipment and lenses and memory cards and all that stuff.
That's he's took the hit here, hasn't he? That's big value stuff, and some stuff that's hard to replace as well.
That's it. All his old stock footage and stuff like that. Even just building up that sort of equipment again. I'm sure he didn't buy it all in one go, so he's gathered it up over the years, you know. So
but you managed to get home anyway. You sorted out a temporary passport for Tomas, did you?
Have to say about the Irish consulate. Like, they were closed on a Sunday, but we contacted them through their emergency number and through some contacts that people had sent us when we asked for help. And the fellow that we got in contact with just literally dropped everything and drove to the office, and he got Tomas sorted out with a temporary passport. Now, he still had a bit of an issue getting through passport control to get out. The TSA weren't going to let him travel with it because they said it didn't meet their requirements. But eventually he tried another agent and he got through. You know, he was really relieved. He was panicking a bit because he had obviously lost his suitcase, so he had no clothes or anything. Like, so he really needed to get home. But now the pressure's on us now to turn it around, because we're due to fly back to New York on Friday. So he's actually on his way to Dublin today to get a new passport, and then hopefully that we can get the visa reissued before Friday.
Yeah, fingers crossed. But hey, it's from a just focusing on the band's perspective, Chicago one week, Connolly's New York the next. It's fantastic.
It's good. We're looking forward to Chicago. Was a new city for us, so we had been looking forward to that one for a while, and then we always look forward to going to New York. Connolly's there. Bernie, the owner there, always gives us a great welcome, and he looks after us. We're there the whole weekend. This time we're playing three nights on the trot, so we're looking forward to that. It'll be good if we can get this sorted out with this passport. It'll be a good weekend.
Exactly. Or what instrument does Thomas play again?
He plays the banjo.
Right, we need, you might need to get a session session player because he's not stopping the rest of his going.
he'd be a big miss now.
He would, of course. Of course.
We don't even want to think about it.
I'm only messing. I'm only messing.
Obviously, not what we want to happen.
What's the audience over there, Fergal? Is it sort of, you know, immigrants wanting to get a feel for home? Is it, you know, the general population as well, or what?
Probably a mixture of both. Mostly, like in New York, there'll be more people from home, young ones that are out on J1s or whatever. And then, like, the Chicago would be more like the older generation, maybe that their mothers or fathers or grandparents that had moved out there. So there's difference, and there's sort of a mixed crowd, you know. So you never really know what you're going to get until you rock up. But we've been doing Connolly's for a while now, so we sort of know what we're getting there, you know.
Yeah, brilliant stuff. Okay. Listen, there's no point in us putting out any appeals or anything, because what's done is done. All we can do is cross our fingers, and I'm sure the passport office will sort Tomas out, given the pressure on it.
Yeah, passport office, just the big one. The passport office will be sorted today, hopefully. The big one is the US embassy. So if anybody had any contacts in the US consulate in Belfast that could maybe push things through for us now, that would be a big help. But look, fingers crossed at the stage we can get it sorted.
Great stuff, Fergal. Listen, continued success to you. I know you're doing fantastic stuff, and it's great to see.
Thank you, Greg. Thanks.
All right, bye-bye. Look after you. That's Fergal McLoon, singing with the Whistling Donkeys there. Horrible experience, but as I say, you know, the good thing is it seems those that targeted them weren't aware of the value of some of the equipment that was contained within that vehicle, because it could have been pretty more devastating, if that makes sense. I'm told in terms of traffic that around avoid the Leck Road, as there's heavy traffic. I had to turn back. I'm not sure if that's eased that coming a little bit a little while ago. Just wanted to give this a mention, by the way. And the question is, are you a parent living in Ireland? Whether your home is affected by mica pyrite crisis or not, we'd value your input in an important study being conducted by the School of Psychology at Dublin City University. Now, I didn't phrase that. The inclusion of mica there is interesting as a start point to them looking at this. But they're looking at a very important area of it anyway. What they are doing, they're exploring how housing conditions in Ireland may influence parents' well-being, particularly stress and anxiety, and whether supports from family, friends or the community can help parents cope. So what they're looking for, parents aged 18 plus living in Ireland who own their home with at least one child under 18, either living in a defective concrete block or living in a home with no structural issues. So there's two groups. It's a comparison group. So in other words, if you don't live in one of these homes, they need a comparison group. But if you have a defective concrete block home, as I'm phrasing it, they call it mica pyrite, that would be group one. So the survey is anonymous. It takes around 3 to 8 minutes and includes only general questions about feelings, support and housing concerns. No names, addresses or identifying information is collected, and you can stop the process at any time. They say that your participation will help improve understanding of how housing insecurity affects families in Ireland. So it's DCU Surveys. It's kind of a messy URL, so we will share that on our socials just in case you want to feed into that. And it might be advantageous. I know we've done some amazing studies based in the region and involving the college in the north in relation to this. But the more information we can get, the more we can get out there. And as I say, just to be clear, they reference it as the mica pyrite controversy, not I. Greg, can you wish the cast and crew of Letterkenny Musical Society good luck on opening night of Come From Away in On Green On Tonight? Break all the legs and enjoy your run. Lots of love from a very proud Madame Director. Okay, well done, everyone. Have a fantastic show, and I'm sure it's going to be huge. Right, we're joined on the programme now by Eli Stockerty, who's Managing Director of Donegal Airport. Good morning to you. Thanks for joining me.
Good morning, Greg.
Right, okay, so obviously the issue hasn't gone away, and I know we have campaign groups in the community, not least the Cancer Flights and Services group, pushing for a return to where we were at or where we were going, to avoid where we could be going. So anyway, what is the situation from the airport's perspective? You met with the Department of Transport. What's the latest?
Yeah, we met yesterday morning, myself and the chairman, Gary Martin, met with senior officials from the Department of Transport, as well as the senior advisor to the minister. The minister, unfortunately, wasn't available as he's out of the country at the moment. But we had a, you know, we had a robust meeting there with the the officials. It was our first opportunity to engage face to face with them, and you know, they heard our concerns. We highlighted again the concerns that have been raised by the cancer care group and by other, you know, by other people and other airport users in relation to the proposed timetable change. We highlighted those concerns again to them, and you know, we asked for an update on where they're at in their negotiations with the airline. So we were advised that they've been engaging with the airline over the past number of weeks, and that they'll continue to do so, and that they hope to conclude that process within a week or two. Obviously, then, if there's a new proposal put forward by the airline, the department officials will have to do due diligence on that and then make a recommendation to the minister on how to proceed.
Quite rightly, a lot of the focus in the conversation has been about the use of the flights, the services for those seeking medical treatment. But just from the airport's perspective, if we could park that for a moment, what impact do you believe that this new schedule might have on passenger numbers, excluding those going to or returning for medical treatment?
Yeah, obviously those who travel for medical treatment are a very vulnerable group, and you know, they have deep concerns. But we have other airport users, obviously. The afternoon flights were the highest for tourism, so a lot of passengers making connecting flights in through Dublin Airport. The timetable allowed them to connect from early morning right up until about 11:50. So, you know, you had connections coming from the US, from Europe, from, you know, worldwide, basically a lot from the UK. The new timetable just doesn't facilitate that. And again, on the flights out at night time, landing back into Dublin at 9:30 at night, that timetable only serves the immediate Dublin market. It doesn't serve any connecting flights. So, you know, it's going to have a serious impact on our passenger numbers. You know, we estimated, you know, that 48% of, we didn't estimate, the facts are that 48% of the users of the flights are using that afternoon flight. So, you know, you could just say a 48% drop. Now, some of those will transfer over to the morning and the evening. But again, you know, if the aircraft's not overnighting, there can be a loss of confidence in the on-time departure of that morning flight, which could further lose passenger numbers there. So it's very serious concerns for ourselves.
Now, I know, of course, this is a subsidised route, but others have described the new schedule, the morning and evening flight, as effective phantom flights. Now, obviously, there's 52% of those that may transition to them. I don't know. We don't know yet. So with all that in mind, and as someone who runs an airport, what can you see the logic as to why not only the tender was put out as was, but why the airline submitted its tender on the basis that it did? In other words, knowing the figures that you have because of the carrier, why would they schedule flights that we know might be pretty empty?
Well, I mean, obviously I can't speak for the airline and what their rationale was for doing it. I can certainly speculate that it was done in the interest of the airline and not in the interest of the route itself. Because if the airline had to do it on a commercial basis without any funding from the PSO, they certainly wouldn't operate flights at that time in the morning. The demand has always been in the opposite direction. There just isn't enough business traffic wanting to come into Donegal at that time in the morning, and for tourism, it's absolutely nonsensical. You know,
so,
even if
tourists
arrive at 7:25.
Yeah, but so someone who's not
if they arrive at 7:25.
Yeah, yeah. But if someone who's not involved in the industry, presumably, if you have to satisfy the tender, it's probably cheaper to run planes that are half full to empty, and yet you're still ticking the box on the contract.
I mean, there's obviously a wider discussion on the PSO itself and the regulation. We spoke to the department about that yesterday, and, you know, we were trying to get an understanding of why the tender was accepted. But, you know, they have a very clear view that within the regulation, there is only the option to accept the tender or to reject it. So, you know, that's something that should be maybe looked at in the future. And obviously the other issue is that, you know, in hindsight now, if the request for tender were to be rewritten, it would probably be written in a much different way than it had been, but it had worked as it had worked up for 24 years previously without any issue.
Yes, but we unfortunately we cannot rely on custom and practice or something along those lines in these terms. Someone's dropped the ball along the line in terms of the tender, because it wasn't designed to meet the needs. We just so happened to have it meet the needs. So in what do you believe the conversation is then between the department and the airline? Are there red lines in inverted commas? I presume the plane overnighting in Donegal would be one, but you can correct me if I'm wrong. And secondly, the resumption of that afternoon flight. Are those the two concessions in this that you're looking for, or is there more, or maybe that's not them at all?
No, that's absolutely what they are. The overnight in aircraft, and if the aircraft overnights, it naturally leads to a second rotation later in the day from Donegal to Dublin. So, you know, that's exactly what we're looking for. And as I understand it from our conversation with the department, that's the engagement that's going on with the airline at the minute to try and see what options there are to revert to that previous schedule.
And of course, you know, if I were negotiating on behalf of the airline, I'm going to be looking for the best deal possible, and we're going to have to meet somewhere in the middle.
Yeah, I mean, obviously we don't have sight of the discussions that are ongoing, but I'd imagine that, you know, the airline will be associating a cost with any move now to the schedule, because they have planned their summer season on this particular schedule, and if they have to change that now at this stage, that I imagine that there will be costs associated with that, but we don't have any insight into what those costs will be.
Okay, and neither should you have to concern yourself with them, nor should Donegal Cancer Flights and Services, because this is not a problem of our doing. The new timetable due to take effect from the 29th of March, so there is a window, but it's narrowing all of the time.
Yes, it is indeed. We're still operating on the schedule as it is at the moment, and there will be major changes. From the 29th of March, we anticipate that our passenger numbers will drop significantly if the timetable is not reverted back to the previous one.
And the problem is, if that were to stay the case for a year or 2 years, then the argument for a PSO at all becomes weakened. And that's the problem here, I see, medium to long term, because if this were to become normal, well, the government or someone down the line could argue, well, what's the function of a PSO? No one uses it anyway.
Yeah, and I mean, there's a great demand for the PSO. We've been growing our passenger numbers year on year, and, you know, we had envisaged that we would continue to do that within the term of this four-year PSO, and, you know, we'd put a modest growth of 5% per annum onto our passenger numbers on the Dublin route, and that was more than achievable. But obviously now we're sitting in limbo until there's a decision made.
And finally, your sense of the conversation yesterday, that the department is determined to and will find a solution, or is saying to you, listen, we're trying all we can and we can see what the crack is. Which of those do you think it falls into?
We didn't get any definitive assurance from the department that, you know, that they will change the timetable. But, you know, I suppose, you know, at the same time, they did assure us that they're doing everything that they can. So really, you know, over the next week or two, we're hoping to have further. We've asked them to keep us updated on any developments as and when they happen, because we were very much kept in the dark over the whole process from when the tender was first, you know, went out to tender. We got absolutely no information from last October right up until January of this year. So, you know, we've asked them to keep us informed going forward, and, you know, we just have to wait and see now over the next week or two and hope that the right decision will be taken.
Yeah, okay. While you're on, anything you want to mention about the airport whilst we're here? Obviously, we're focusing at the moment on what could be perceived as a negative, but that's to turn it into a positive, because we know the success of these flights and the ability to build on them. Anything exciting to let us know before you go? Let's not waste a good a crisis, right?
We want to obviously thank everybody who has come out in such strong support. We still have our Glasgow flights operating, and we're actually meeting with Loganair on Friday of this week to discuss our summer schedule. We're operating twice weekly at the moment, but that will increase to four times a week for the summer. And, you know, that route has been building as well over the last number of years. It's a commercial route. It's, you know, it's not as easy to to operate sometimes as one that's, you know, got the guarantee of a PSO. Yeah. But we're working very hard with the airline to keep that route operational, and the passenger numbers are growing there as well.
Okay, listen, thank you very much indeed. I do appreciate your time. We'll stay on top of this as well. Eilish Doherty, who is the Managing Director of Donegal Airport.
The Community Garda information slot is brought to you by Sheridan Security Systems, monitoring homes and businesses in the Northwest for intruder, fire, panic and medical signals. Call Sheridan Security on 91-26025.
Welcome back. 21 minutes past 10 on this Tuesday morning, the 10th of March. Time for Community Garda information, and Garda Grainne is back with me today. Grainne, how are you getting on?
I'm doing the best, Greg.
Good to have you with us. Thanks so very much indeed. Lots to get through, as always. We'll start with appeals. Criminal damage in Muff, Grainne.
Yes, this incident happened at Sapa Muff in the early hours of Wednesday, the 4th of March, in around 1:40 a.m. So a vehicle was discovered in fire at that location. On the R239, it's about a mile out of Muff on the Burnfoot Road. It was totally destroyed as a result of the fire. So the fire services attended the scene. We're appealing to anybody who might have relevant information to contact Gardaí in Buncrana on 932-0540. And if anybody travelled in that area with a dash cam between 1 a.m. and 1:40 a.m. on that date, we're asking them to please make that footage available to us. And this goes for all of our appeals today. The Garda Confidential line, they may be reached on 1800 666 111 with any information.
Yeah, indeed. Staying in Inishowen, a criminal damage incident on the 5th of March.
Yes, this incident happened in the area of Shandrum, Drumfries, Buncrana, between approximately 6 p.m. and 7 p.m. on Thursday, the 5th of March. So a number of windows of a house in that area were smashed between those times. We're appealing to anybody who might have observed any type of suspicious activity in that area or who might have any relevant information to contact Buncrana Gardaí on 932-0540. And as always, again, if any motorists travelled in that area between those times with a dash cam, we're asking them to please make that footage available to us. And it was between 6 and 7 p.m. in the evening, so hopefully, you know, there might have been a lot of traffic in the area around that time.
Bright, really effectively, or at least some daylight left. Church Road, Milford, next. Criminal damage there.
Yes, so Gardaí and Milford were en route to a call on Saturday the 7th of March in around 3:15 p.m. when they noticed smoke coming from a derelict house that was located on the church road in the town. So they then discovered that a mattress had been set alight upstairs in this house. The fire services attended the scene. They extinguished the fire. We're appealing to anybody who might have been in that area with a dash cam between 2 p.m. and 3:15 p.m. to please make that footage available to us. Again, if anybody can assist with relevant information, they can contact Gardaí and Milford on 91-53060. And I think this house in question would be known. There groups of youths would often frequent this house. And
yeah.
I mean, we're not pointing the finger at the youths on this occasion, but just if anybody did see any gang of young ones around the house or around that area between those times.
Yeah, for that matter. And of course, it's tying up Garda resources, the fire services, unnecessarily, both this and the car incident earlier. You know, it's a dangerous activity and it's a serious crime.
It is. And of course, as you said, the danger aspect especially, you know, and thankfully that fire hadn't spread. But, you know, things could turn out. There could be a tragic outcome to these sorts of incidents.
100%, yeah. Let's go now to Rafo and criminal damage being investigated there.
Yes, another criminal damage incident. This happened at William Street, Rafo, in the early hours of Monday the 9th of March at about 2:45 a.m. So two wheelie bins at the side of a house in that area were set alight at that time. The fire services again attended this scene. They extinguished the fire, and thankfully this fire didn't spread and nobody was hurt. We're appealing to anybody who might be in a position to assist us with this investigation to contact us in Letterkenny on 91-67100. So if anybody travelled in that area of William Street or within Rafo Town area itself between 2 a.m. and 2:45 a.m. with a dash cam, we're asking them to please make that footage available to us.
Indeed. Right. So that's another one that could have turned out very nasty indeed, isn't it? As soon as you start lighting stuff beside a house, it's crazy activity. Right. So firearms renewals reminder. So are all firearms renewed at the same time of the year?
No. Well, the firearms, everybody who has a firearm cert, they'll receive the renewal cert in the post approximately 3 months prior to the expiry of their current certificate. And I know, look, a lot of people probably this comes and think of loads of time. They throw it in a drawer. So the man we have here in charge of the firearms in Letterkenny has asked me just to issue just a reminder to anybody who wishes to renew their firearms cert to do so. Once you receive that renewal cert in the post, please act promptly and get it done straight away.
Can I say something in relation to that? There's a human condition here. because I find with my car insurance, the renewal comes out a month before, and I have these great notions of getting it sorted or pricing around, and next thing you know, the final reminder comes. And that's fine, that's electronic, that's computer, and you get it sorted. There's a manual physical element to this, isn't there, Granny? And I'd say a lot of us, not me, but a lot of people are leaving it to, oh, right, that's tomorrow, and leaving putting an awful lot of pressure on the office.
They are. Well, look, if you're delaying and submitting your form until too close to the deadline, by the time that application's processed and you receive your new cert, like your expiry date and your current cert would have could have passed at that stage yet. So if that happens, you have then have an illegally held firearm until you get your new certificate in the post. And Gardaí can seize firearms when the owner has failed to renew. So please also just look, if anybody's having any difficulty with the form, there's no problem, call into any of your local Garda stations and we'll assist you with the form and help you out filling it out.
Yeah, it sounds like there's a little bit of discretion or grace there. Don't rely on that because it's not guaranteed. And, you know, as you say, people have found their firearms being seized. Right, lambing season is well underway, of course. And the reason why we have to keep putting out these warnings annually or biannually or however often is because there's instances every single time.
There are. There's
a, you know, there's
especially
sheep
at this
warring
time of
instances
year.
Every single year.
Yeah.
And it can be 30 sheep here, 5 sheep there, 10 sheep there. And this is devastating to farmers and the amount of money they've invested in their animals. So that's why it seems familiar, because people still allow their dogs to go unchecked.
Yeah.
So what is...
It causes devastation for the farmers, but also if you have a beloved family pet, a dog, you know, a farmer is well within their rights to shoot that dog if that dog is out worrying their sheep. So, you know, just in the interest of protecting your pet also, it is lambing season and we want to remind all dog owners of the harm their pets can cause if you let them roam free or unsecured and they're not kept under effectual control. So at this time of year, there's always issues with sheep kills when dogs are attacking livestock. And just to make people aware as well, it just isn't in relation to killing sheep. Sheep worrying isn't just killing sheep or chasing sheep. It's the stress injury and the death of sheep caused by loose or out of control dogs. And a single attack can devastate a flock. It can cause a ewe to miscarry and leave lambs orphaned. So, as I said, a farmer can shoot at any dog that is worrying or attacking their sheep. And with dog ownership comes responsibility. Please secure your dog. Have it microchipped and registered with your vet. And just check the boundaries also of where you keep your dog. Make sure that it's secure, that your dog isn't able to escape. And if you do see any out of control or, you know, dogs roaming in your area, please contact your local Garda station or the dog warden and make them aware.
Yeah, because you could be on, not only could you lose your dog, but you could also be on the chain too for the farmer's losses. A lot of people seemingly, you know, go out for a walk or a run or what have you, and the dog runs away in front of them or behind them. That dog running up and down a fence where there are sheep and lamb is worrying the sheep.
It is, and I can.
You know, the sheep is not conscious of a barrier between themselves and the dog.
No.
So a lot of this can be, in inverted commas, innocent with great consequences.
It can. The dog doesn't actually have to go in and bite the sheep or attack the sheep. Yeah, if they cause it worry, the ewe can miscarry the lambs, yeah.
Right, Garda, sorry, Rathmullen and Rye Community, Rathmullen and Rye Community Meeting. What's this about?
Yes,
is it Ray or Rye? It's Rye.
Ray, yeah.
Ray or Rye?
Ray. Ray, I would say,
they spell it, there's not they, but... Ray and Rye, I don't know.
I would just say Ray.
Let's go
run
for
with
it.
Ray.
Run with Ray.
A community meeting will take place.
That's Ray Darcy's thing, wasn't it? Ray? Run with Ray.
Yeah, well, Ray. R-A-Y.
Where's Ray Darcy now? Anyway, go on.
So this meeting will take place on Wednesday, the 11th of March at the St. Vincent de Paul Centre in Rathmullen at 7 p.m. So they're going to discuss the possibility of establishing a community alert area or a text alert scheme locally in that area. Gardaí will be there. They'll be offering crime prevention and home security advice. They'll be giving a talk in relation to that. And Katrina Sinnott from Muncher na Chéire will be there also. She'll be there to discuss, you know, the text alert scheme and community alert scheme. Everybody's very welcome to attend. We're hoping for a good turnout on the night.
Just a quickie. Just wondering, when you're running through the systems, obviously what we've seen at the moment is a dramatic increase in the purchase of home heating oil because people have been advised, look, the price is going up. So people are getting, you know, 1,000 litres of home heating oil at whatever it might be at the moment or whatever they got it for. But that's actually going to end up being worth 1,800, 2,000, 2,200. We don't know. And a lot of people might suspect that, you know, there's an opportunity here to make some money. Are we seeing any peak or spike in home heating oil yet, and I think it's something we really need to be conscious of now, because I get a strong sense in a week or two or three you or your colleagues are going to be in here talking about it, Grania.
Yeah, and we did issue advice on our Garda Facebook page this week to be preventative more than anything, because I did check for the last week. We haven't had any. We had a report a number of weeks ago back in February.
Nothing.
But not a spike.
Moment.
Not a noticeable spike yet. But as you say, look, it is a very real possibility.
Secure. Okay. Yeah. Right, now, the Donegal Garda School Quiz has reached its final stage. It's exciting.
Yes, the final will take place at the Clanree Hotel in Letterkenny on Thursday the 12th of March at 7:30 p.m. So participating teams are asked to be at the hotel from 7 p.m. to get set up and get ready. We're looking forward to seeing the children with their families and teachers on the night, and we're wishing them all the very best of luck.
Coffee morning?
Yes.
Where's that? At Letterkenny Garda Station?
This is at Letterkenny Garda Station.
What's happening?
Yeah, so this is to mark International Women's Day 2026. So, and Garda Síochána Donegal Women's Network are hosting a coffee morning in the station, Letterkenny Station, on Wednesday the 11th of March in aid of Donegal Domestic Violence Services. So, look, everybody's very welcome to call into the station that morning between 11 a.m. and 1 p.m. to show their support for this charity, and we're looking forward to seeing everybody there for a cup of tea and a natter and a sweet treat.
Lovely stuff. Now, St. Patrick's Day is upon us. This has really crept up on me. It's next Tuesday.
Yeah, because funny, I was thinking too, there's a lot of events, the Relay for Life's coming up, a lot of events that it just feels like since you were there last.
Nothing about, I mean, presumably people have been flat out all year organising St. Patrick's Day parades and everything.
Not the St. Patrick's Day parade, we're taking off a lot of organisation.
Yeah, and here I am just going, what, next Tuesday? Yeah. And they're making me come into work on Monday and then giving me Tuesday off and then back to work Wednesday. It's useless. They should have it like Easter where it moves to the Sunday and Saturday regardless.
Yeah, well, at least you'll be off. You can go out and enjoy the parades. Do you know?
Can you?
Well.
Right, so what's going to happen over there? Because a lot of people are actually going to be taking Monday off, I'd imagine, and extending. It's kind of going to be like a St. Patrick's weekend.
Like bank holiday weekend, really, yeah. So it is on the horizon again. Gardaí will be out in the roads over the course of this weekend and on the day itself, St. Patrick's Day, operating checkpoints and speed checks. We're urging drivers, please don't get behind the wheel. If you're under the influence of alcohol or drugs, plan a lift home in advance of your night out. If you're planning to go out socialising, get a taxi or plan your lift home in advance. Don't ever get into a vehicle as a passenger if you think that driver may be under the influence. To drivers, slow down, wear your seatbelt and leave your phone out of reach when you're driving so you're not tempted to take your eyes off the road at any stage. So there was actually quite a few vehicles seized over the course of the weekend just gone by in Letterkenny and Lifford and Buncrana areas. And, you know, the guards are out. They're out all the time.
I think if you're driving without insurance, particularly but not exclusively, if you are driving unaccompanied on L plates, whether you have them up or not, you really are likely to get caught.
Yeah, and that's just
because of the new software and stuff.
Yeah, that is something that I do want to stress today, because that is something that we have seen a spike in recently, detections of unaccompanied learner permit drivers. If you're a learner permit driver, you must have an experienced driver with you at all time. They have to hold a full driving licence for 2 years or over. You have to have that driver with you. The Gardaí are, they're just seizing your car at the roadside, you know, because the insurance companies really won't cover if you're driving unaccompanied.
It's uninsured.
Then, yeah,
all the
more or less, yeah. So your vehicle is seized. So just don't take that chance either, you know. Make sure that you have that experienced driver with you.
And also, too, with the drink and drug driving, right? Drink driving, we've some idea of, you know, you can't drive the next day, really, to a certain time. You can figure that out yourself. But drug driving, drugs are illegal. You should never be taking drugs. But I think, you know, people need to start realising what they do at the weekend and the impact it can have on them if they are stopped in the following days.
Yeah.
And they may have completely lost any effect of the drugs. And these are people who have been put off the road for years, 2 years. Not to mention, I know there is an issue here, obviously, with being under the influence, your reactions and all of that. And I'm not in any way taking away from that messaging. I know drugs are illegal, you shouldn't take them. But I would not be surprised if there's an awful lot of people who are getting done for drug driving sometime after the fact. And because they're illegal, it's not really talked about how long it takes for them to be worn off. And I'm not even asking you to do that, Granny, don't get me wrong. But there's a lot of people being done, I would say, for drug driving. And it's like the morning after, in inverted commas. But they stick in the system for longer. And there's no limit. You get drugs in your system when you're checked. and that's it, you're drug driving.
That's it, yeah. Then you'll get your conviction for drug driving.
And I think it's a conviction.
And with alcohol as well, you know, people need to be so careful the next morning. And a lot of people think they're okay. They get into the car, you will know. You'll know in yourself.
It's
evening,
really. Before you could, you know, I know you can't put a time on that either, but you're quite right. You know yourself.
Yeah, you do feel it. You would feel it within yourself. If you feel that you're not able to drive the following day, please don't, you know, take that risk. Get somebody else to drive you to your destination. Don't ever get behind the wheel. If you feel, you will know. You'll know if you're, you know, if you feel capable, you know.
There's a no time where you definitely know you should not be driving.
Yeah.
And then there's a time where you go, but you know you should not be driving.
Yeah, and there are a lot of drivers who are, in fact, arrested the following morning the night before.
It's
you
not
know.
Just the morning either. Yeah. But the drugs thing, as I say, no one talks about how long they stay in your system, and quite rightly because they're illegal, but... you know, a drug driving conviction is no laughing matter for a bit of whatever it might be at the weekend. Right, so just staying with St. Patrick's Day, finally, you know, and this is the part of the programme where it's only Letterkenny that counts, but carry on.
Ah, yeah, no, well, I have added a piece at the end.
Have
now.
You?
Yes,
oh,
I have,
thank
yeah.
You.
So Letterkenny, Letterkenny between 1 p.m. and 5 p.m. on Tuesday the 17th of March, St. Patrick's Day. The Port Road, so from the station roundabout and on down Main Street to the bottom of Lower Main Street will be closed. The whole Main Street really will be closed to traffic. The Old Town Road then from the bottom of Lower Main Street as far as the entrance to the Old Dun Stores will also remain closed between those times to facilitate the parade. Diversions will be in place and Gardaí will be on hand to assist. So, look, that's the Letterkenny details for their parade. I'm well aware there's parades taking place all across Donegal on St. Patrick's Day. And any details that we receive in relation to upcoming road closures for parades anywhere in Donegal.
You know what, I jest, but locally there's great stewardship, stewarding locally for places.
Yeah. Well, if anyone wants to send in their details to us, you know,
you
to the Garda
Facebook
page, I can post it then to our Garda Facebook page. Make
lovely
people aware,
stuff.
Yeah.
Grainne, thanks so very much, always. We really do appreciate you calling up. That's Garda Grainne Doherty with this week's Community Garda Information. We'll be back with that item again after the 10 o'clock news next Tuesday. Okay, I'm joined in studio by Derry comedian Max Roddy. Hi, Max.
Greg, how are you doing this morning? Good morning, Donegal.
Yeah, great to have you with us. And congratulations on this trajectory that you're on.
It's crazy, Greg.
Yeah.
It is. Obviously, I've been a performer a long time, but I wrote a show 2 years ago and that had one night. And then I wrote another show and we intended that show, Peter Pan, because I never grew up, was the joke, to have one night as well. We are on course for 24 shows across the UK.
How does that happen? Is it word of mouth? Because you can advertise and do the social media to you blue in the face, right? But when something grows like that, there's something else happens.
See, there's a lot of... Yes, it is great having good numbers on social media. And since I got sober, I've had 40 million views in 2 years.
It's amazing.
That at 300,000 shares. And that is amazing. They have that online. But the reason you're getting in these clubs and getting rebooked is by sending clips. No, you send a lot of clips. I sent stuff to Dublin. No one got back to me. Mm. But London, Liverpool, Edinburgh, we're like, I'm on over. And we did opening night of the tour in Top Secret Comedy Club. And in the comedy world, it's hard to even get in the door there. And for them to let me do an hour show, it's probably like, well, his numbers are good. Let's see if he gets on. And it's very hard to get rebooked there, Greg. And they did opening night of the tour. Mm. And they've now booked me to close the tour as well. And they have pre-booked next year's tour without even a joke being wrote. So things, you have to prove yourself on the stages is basically where I'm at.
What's that audience like in that club or you know, some of the comedy clubs in inverted commas? Because it can be different. Say you get up on stage and on Green On, you get a sort of a mixed crowd.
Yes.
Those comedy clubs, you probably have comedians in the audience as well. And they're tuned a different way, maybe. Are they more receptive? Are they more critical? And if you win them over, you've done a really good job or what?
Well, they say London is the hardest room. This is the pressure cooker rooms. This is where you're looking around the wall. You're seeing Michael McIntyre. The night before I performed, who just hosted the Brits, Jack Whitehall. The girl said to me in the sound check, no pressure. Jack Whitehall just headlined here last night. And I was like, but over there, Greg, I feel at home in these bigger situations. I always have. See, if there's 10 people in a bar in Derry, I get more nervous. But over there was 120 people came. And there was agents there. There was a mixed crowd. And it's a very hard crowd to impress. And the fact that they rebooked me was above expectations.
And they did that pretty much on the spot.
20 hours later.
Well, that's on the spot. That's astonishing.
If you're getting out within a week, you're happy. Yeah. 20 hours later, you're welcome back here anytime you want. And they say it's a 1 in 400 chance of that happening.
Wow, fantastic. But none of this is phasing you. I mean, you're like, I mean, it must be your character. It's the dairy in you. I mean, you're enjoying it, but it's not like, I don't know how to describe.
Can you feel it coming out of me? You can feel the passion?
Yeah, but also to, you know, it's not, it feels like you've earned it as well, that you know you're good enough. See, does that make sense? But you're not cocky.
Yeah, definitely not
but
cocky.
But you know, like, you deserve it. Like, oh, I don't know how to describe it.
My younger years, Greg, from 9 years of age, I always talked about it. I got to watch Phoenix Nights. A bit too young to be watching it, and I became
Cracking show.
Oh my God, I could talk about Peter Kay for an hour. We can forget about me. Yeah, well. He is a massive inspiration. Catherine Tate. I grew up with a house full of comedy. It's all we had on the TV.
Yeah.
And I mind saying 10, 11, 12, and I was doing the drama schools and theatres, pantomimes. I was with my mum when I was 12, and she always rolled her eyes. Mum, I'm going to be a famous comedian. She's like, you're a dairy mum.
Yeah.
All right, son, here, go up and do your homework. I have studied performing arts. I have been on stage and tours 17, 18, 19 years of age, and then I lost that, and that's where I openly talk about getting sober 3 years ago.
Well, that's what I'm going to say. You're 33 now, still young, right?
Yeah.
But there seems to be a period of time between, you know, your dream and achieving that dream.
I had a hiatus.
So is that booze, is it?
Yeah, I became an addict.
Yeah.
And it wasn't anything more than binge drinking and extracurricular activities when I drank, and It was affecting my career. No, I wanted to be a comedian when I was 19, but I was too busy running about trying to be one of the boys, put myself in the situation and sort of got a grip on me in my early 20s.
What was it in you that they got the claws in?
Like, got out of that situation?
No, but how booze and whatever got its claws into you?
I don't sort of know when it happened. I often look back and go, I could have stopped at 21. Looking back, I was always the one who was put in a taxi or too much drink. He fell asleep on the sofa. No, I had a problem, I think, from about 19.
But you didn't need drink to perform. You didn't have social anxiety. You didn't need it for confidence, right? So that's not part of it.
I always joke, Craig, and say, why give alcohol to a man who already has confidence?
Yeah.
So it was like, so there's a thing I've learned. Some people just can't drink. And I just seemed to
doesn't get on with people. I treated every
alcohol situation like it was my 21st birthday. Yeah. Like, oh, why are we not having more fun? And that's probably where the performer
and
was.
And two, what can happen? You can get two lads that can drink 5 pints and it doesn't fill the gap in their teeth. You wouldn't even know you had them. And then you get another who, they're all mates, they're all peers. And after the third pint, they're starting to go, I'm starting to feel a bit wobbly here.
Yeah.
And I think that sometimes can feed into it. And you do that consecutive weekends and next thing you know.
Aye, and it's sort of, I realised.
I'm not saying that's your story.
No, of course, but I realised then it was holding me back. I hadn't been on stage for 6 or 7 years and it was becoming a problem.
Yeah.
And getting sober, I'm very lucky that I had something that was there. The foundations of the teenage years was waiting for me.
Yeah.
I'm very lucky. Some people don't get sober till they're 50.
You just had to reconnect with that version.
Reconnect
of you.
With a passion. Yeah. And that was my.
So when did you decide to go off the booze?
30 years of age.
Okay.
So. I did 8 months and then I started drinking again for 6 months and then I got sober on the 19th of August 2023. So I'm coming up to 3 years.
Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
It's a fantastic achievement. It really is.
And it's just, I'm very lucky because some people get sober and they're like, what will I do? Mm. I went and wrote a show. I was like, let's go.
Yeah. And I will move on to the show because also too, there's a very special incentive going on at the moment, but just interesting because it might help other people. You then now are performing, though, in raucous situations with loads of booze present. Mm-hmm. You're okay with that. You've had to figure that out, haven't you?
I have found
happiness.
Maybe
that's worked for you.
I have found happiness where I can have a coffee and about a carrot cake after a show. And know this rock star lifestyle that you dream of when you're younger? I'm like, no, on stage is my drug. On stage is where I feel happy. And I'm happy to get a cab home. Everybody else can go drink. And I'm going back and going, I can't wait to do this again.
I'm in the company of Max Roddy here. He's a comedian from Derry. He's been named as the comedian to watch at London's legendary Top Secret Comedy Club. He's got a free pass into all of these spots, such has been the reaction to his show all over Britain and Northern Ireland. And it's coming to On Green On Theatre on the 1st of May 2026. Now, all tickets for Max's show on Friday the 1st of May are only €14. Now, they're usually priced at €20. Now, you have to pay in cash. No, I'm only joking.
We're just getting a bucket at the start of the show, a big massive bucket. Throw what you want on there.
No, you can pay by card, but you use the promo card code MAX14, and that expires on March 31st. But that theatre is going to be packed. It's just a case of whether you get your ticket and you get it for €14, because it's going to be full anyway. So that's the gravy here, right? So get on to ongreenon.com and use the code MAX14, and you can see this show that's taken the best comedy clubs around these islands by storm. It's the Peter Pan tour. Now, this is your first show.
It's my debut tour.
Where are you on in terms of writing your next show?
I don't switch off. I'm always going to the Mrs. Kerry. I've got an idea, and she had a comedian grandfather, and she is such a good person to go, that's good. If I can make her laugh, because her grandfather was the original comedian in Derry back in the day, and if I can make her laugh,
you know you're doing something
I know
right.
I'm doing something right, because he was very witty, he was very, very clued in, and I don't switch off. So I've already got maybe the next, I'm doing a tour for the next 5 years.
What that's about the likes of Edinburgh? Have you done Edinburgh?
I did Edinburgh last year.
And how did you find that?
I feel like I work better sometimes out of Ireland. I'm getting more receptions over there.
And did you do a big room, small room?
Or I did two nights last year, and I was only doing 20-minute spots, 10-minute spots, and there was 120 and 90. But this year, this tour confirmed yesterday, and I'm absolutely delighted. Biggest comedy festival in the world, Peter Pan, is doing 6 nights in a row.
In Edinburgh?
The full hour, 6 nights in a row from the 9th of August.
And what capacity venue is that?
That's going to be like a 50 room, but that's where you're getting
no,
50.
No, that's not... in Edinburgh, that doesn't mean it's a 50 room. That's not how it works over there. That just means it becomes incredibly exclusive.
Yeah.
And it's I presume it's a famous room too.
It's a very popular area near St. James's Quarter, and it's Alchemist. It's a very fancy room.
Right,
and
okay, I heard about that.
That room last year was packing out every night. And if you do one good show, you can have a queue out the next night.
Yeah. And it's not, as I say, it's not... and really, to some extent, you could argue you've kind of skipped Edinburgh, but it's still great for you to be able to go and have that experience. Some people use it as that springboard to get...
To the tour.
To the tour.
But it's where you can sort of get that next step again, where agents can step in. And
of course, yeah. So where did it go from here, Max?
We're doing a 5 years every tour. We started off thinking we're going to do 14 shows this year. It's turned into 24.
Yeah.
And most guys don't achieve that to 10 years. And I'm only full-time 2 years. Mm-hmm. And that maybe with that performance background that I'm stage ready with the presence. No, agents have said he's got the stage presence. Obviously, you're working every day. You're not the finished product. Not a chance.
Yeah.
But that raw stuff can work sometimes in comedy. We don't want to get too scripted.
Yeah.
They want that raw madness. And people have described me as Peter Kay with ADHD.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, Peter Kay with the Fs or not?
Well,
because Peter Kay's a bit family friendly.
Well, let's just say my TikTok's a bit more friendly. And I would advise, don't be bringing anybody under 16 anyway. Okay. That will be the advice.
I'm not saying Peter Kay's done, because he's filling arenas, right? But maybe putting him to one side, what other contemporary comedians do you sort of look up to? I mean, there are a few that write based off their own experiences and are very real. I don't know.
I am very character-based on stage as well, where I'll go into a story and jump. Robin Williams was...
Right, okay.
That's the pinnacle to me. These guys can commit to a bit, and I've been compared to when Max is doing an accent, he's not in the room, he is just committing 100%, and that's what people, I mean, crowd work, Kevin Bridges, of course, but I'm inspired by these old school character crazy 19 different voices. You don't know what I'm going to say next. It's very
high
energy.
Do you know what you're going to say next?
Here's one for you, Karen. Here's one for you. My partner has seen this show 14 times and she knows it's the same jokes, but you don't know what this man's going to say.
Do you vibe it then with the audience? Where is the variance coming from? Is it just you in that moment? Are you looking in the front couple of rows, or what's going on?
It's just every show you feed off the energy of the audience. Like the last night I did a show there on Saturday in Derry in the Newgate Arts. I broke up with Kerry live on stage and give the girl in the front row my number just because she was having a laugh at me. I'm very unpredictable, and a guy stood up and I thought he was looking to leave the show, and I was like, I've lost a follower, all this stuff. And then I made sure when they came back into the room, everybody turned around and I had it queued up. everybody tell him to get out. So he walks back in after going to the toilet. And they was all, get out. And it was just all, but he came back and sat down.
If you go into a comedy show, go to the toilet before.
Rookie mistake.
You knew what was coming. What's some of your favourite stuff to talk about in the show, Max, that sort of goes, you know?
We'll talk about some things we can talk about. I go into double standards of how women can do certain things that men can't do. I can't say that joke here, but I also have a great... I've been renowned for a song on the tour, Sitting on the Dock of the Bay, because let's just say there's an interesting true story from 10 years ago that ends with me singing Sitting on the Dock of the Bay, and that has been sort of become the theme tune of the tour. Also, I'll get into my mum. She is the most stereotypical Irish mother. She writes half the show just by being herself.
Just existing.
Your mother's an easy target. There's also guys I went to school with. I was doing content 20 years ago, and I also get into how 20 years ago, these guys were giving me a lot of bullying in school for running about with a camcorder, singing in musicals. Now all these barbers are recording, or no, they're doing the same things I was doing, so it's cool they do videos now.
Let me ask you one thing, because I'm out of time, but I picked up on this Dublin thing you mentioned.
Yes.
Is that a sore point for you? That you that they maybe want to jump on the bandwagon now, but they weren't, you know, the British, Northern Irish... clubs were there for you and were here for you, of course, don't get me wrong, but you got the knockback down there?
No, but you have to be humbled sometimes and realise, no, there is other people thinking you need to earn your stripes. But I was like, Dublin's something I will get to, and I was gutted with the reply I got. I sent the same press release and videos to Liverpool, which is the biggest comedy club in the world, and they were like, come on over, Max.
Yeah.
And they seen me perform for 10 minutes before. So I do believe it can be... Who is this guy? We've never seen you on stage.
What I just think there's a little, and we see it in different areas of society, I think there's a little group, and you're not getting into that group because next thing you might take my slot on TV, or whatever it might be, you know?
But London, Liverpool, I think we're going to be okay.
Yeah, happy days. Max Roddy presents the Peter Pan Tour, and it's coming to Ungreenon in Letterkenny on the 1st of May 2026. And as part of Max's appearance on this show, we've got a really special offer for you. Tickets are €14 instead of the usual €20 when you use the promo code MAX14. Offer expires at the end of this month. As I said earlier on, that theatre is going to be full. It just is a case of whether you're there and you paid £14 for your ticket. Listen, I'm so pleased that you're doing so well, Max. Well done. And we'll chat again, no doubt. And just the best luck with everything. Go ahead.
And just to be sure, it's Roddy14.
What did I say?
Max. just in case they try and type it in.
Take it up with Ungreenon.
Hi, Ungreenon's got it wrong, so yeah, it is Roddy. Yeah. Maybe there's two codes.
They
maybe
can take
two.
The wedgie, I'm not.
I'm going straight to the theatre.
Back after the break.